On the night of April 14, 1912, the White Star liner, Titanic, on her maiden voyage, was racing through the dark waters of the North Atlantic Ocean, attempting to set a speed record from Southampton to New York. She was about 350 nautical miles east of Newfoundland and about 1,600 miles northeast of New York, when suddenly an iceberg loomed up out of the darkness, a short distance ahead. The attempt at evasive action failed, and the ship collided with the iceberg. The time was 11:40 p.m. The so-called watertight compartments started taking on water rapidly, tilting the forward section down. Hundreds of passengers rushed to the stern of the ship, while others struggled to get into the lifeboats. At approximately 2:18 a.m. the next morning, April 15, 1912, the great ship nosed down into the icy waters and plunged to her watery grave. This account of the sinking of the Titanic is that of Bill Mueller, a young German who was one of the survivors. He was interviewed in his 96th and 97th years.
You go ahead, Mr. Mueller.
No, you want to talk to me?
Yeah.
From 1907 to 1914, when the war broke out, I traveled in the company of Mr. Tietze Hetema, a Dutchman. He was titled traffic inspector. That is, most of the companies but it insured the ships do that with money what is in Holland. And that is mostly money what the Germans deposit there to have it safe for the taxes. So that's where the money comes from to finance the ships. And I traveled together with Mr. Hetema to supervise that the money is used properly. And that is how we came on with the Titanic. The Titanic, you know, in 1911, end of August, the Olympic came out, the sister ship of the Titanic. And the Olympic made a real good showing. Real good. And now the Titanic came out in April, and that was the bad time of the year, because the water is sticky and the water waves and wind is all against the ship. So the ship had to get a course as short as possible, because if the Titanic didn't reach what the Olympic did, then she would number two, you know? She had to be number one, she had to beat the previous ship. That was her problem, and that is what she said at the end. So she came out, and of course, she traveled that northern course, which she shouldn't, because at the end of the voyage, she wanted to show so and so many days and so many hours, and the newspaper man had something to tell the people. But if it came out the other way, you know, and the newspaper told them that the people what was going on, the Titanic was gone, you know, lost. There was the publicity. So that was a problem. And the only thing I want to tell right now, the Titanic was too big a ship for those people who handled her. The Olympic had come out a year before in August and had taken all the experienced people. So what came to the Titanic were more or less inexperienced people who were not first class. And the trip itself, and the first 4 days, was good. She did pretty good run. There were no difficulties and so on. And everything seems okay. But for early April, she was too much in the northern coast with the ISIS. And she run in and nobody saw it, maybe, but you could smell it. You know, when you got icebergs around, you smell it. Your nose gets the cold air. So anybody who was experienced, they knew down well, there was danger. But you had to forget the danger because you want the ship coming over in 5.5 days. Yeah? That was I was this. And as I say, when the ship struck the iceberg, well, it was hardly felt in the ship. But it took only 15 minutes about and you felt it, because your floor wasn't straight anymore. And then you know that there was danger and everybody went up. Most people were already in bed.
Would you say that again, Mr. Mueller, after 15 minutes, something happened after 15 minutes?
Yeah.
And could you say that again? I didn't quite understand that.
After 15 minutes,
it struck the iceberg, and then 15 minutes later, you said something about the fuel? See,
it took a little time, you know, till the compartments in front were filled with water. And as they filled with water and they chilled it down, then you know all over the ship there's danger. And my boss, he just looked at me with a look as pity. You came in this danger about me because I traveled with him. But that wasn't much of my concern. My concern was what we could do. But the Captain Schmidt, you know, he knew that my boss was inspector from the insurance, and he couldn't lose him. So he sent the officer out to get us boat out in front where the boats were made ready. And we went in the boats for a purpose of the best of the ship, you know, not to save our lives. Because there was some talk about that we came aboard in the boats before women and children came in boats. But the other part was this: many of those women were from Italy and so on. And why should they be saved for more important men? You see? Because we, my boss, maybe I too, we were needed to be witness. And the court sits, you know, over the disaster. So we had to be there, and that is where we were put aboard the boats on the perceive. And we were on the boats maybe a couple of hours, and then the Carpathia came up from the Cunard line, you know. The Carpathia, she runs from the Mediterranean to New York. She came up and took us on board and brought us to New York. Now, what's the next question?
Well, that's good. I was wondering how you came to be on the ship.
How I came on it?
Yes, so you've told me that, so that's wonderful. I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I was secretary to Mr. Hedemore.
Yes,
was traffic inspector.
Yes, yes.
And he had to be on board for the insurers to see that everything was all right.
Mm-hmm.
And good thing he was there, because the insurance communists, they got first-class testimony.
Yes, yes, I understand that.
Yeah.
All right, it was a ship of the White Star Line.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Now, perhaps you could tell us the number of people and the number of people and something about there were some very prominent people.
Yeah.
And the passengers, quite a few passengers, but a very big crew, and maybe something about the size of the ship, and then maybe we'll get to talking about how the crew and the people reacted
yeah.
when it came to saving those who were saved.
Yeah.
All right.
Most of you see, there was a big rush all up to the boats, and officers had to use knuckle busters to keep people away from the boats, because the foreigners and the poorer people, you know, they cry most for their safety. While important people stood there and been watching and say, when our time comes, we go on the boats. You see, there were some real gentlemen on board, like Mr. Gracie, and such many that they knew all about how the conditions were, but they were gentlemen, they stood back. There could be a lot more people saved, but that rush from the third class people, you know, that blocked the way for other people to get in the boats. And, I will say, Captain Schmidt was capable. He was, I think, a pretty good man. You know, that was a situation no man is trained for. It was something out of order, something in the first place, you see, the Titanic is an unsinkable ship. For the first time, you know, a company had built an unsinkable ship. And that was in everybody's mind, that ship couldn't go any wrong. That was a big mistake. Whatever the good Lord upstairs, you know, he knows what is safe or not. And don't believe what people say, unsinkable. So they got a good lesson there. Captain Schmidt was a pretty good captain under the circumstances. But I will say the officers, they lacked a hell of a lot. We were not trained for such a thing, because nobody believed that it could happen. They were not trained for it, and so there was no, that is what someone said, if this was a German ship with a German crew, everybody would be alive and safe. For a matter of discipline, you know. But I am not a really good British seaman, I know him too well. But there is a certain thing that I have about discipline, you know, that everybody knows where he has to be, and not rushing forward so on if it's out of time. This was the big problem of the, there was a, nobody there. And then the other thing is, the people, the ship went down on front on the bow. There was a little bit tied up, you know, at the end. So people all rushed to the end of the ship. When they stood there were about 500 people packed on the deck of the stern of the ship. And then that broke up and went down with other people on board. This was the most thing what could happen. But that's how it happened, and there were no officers there to tell those people, come away, you can't overload that end. Yeah? That is why the officers didn't know what to do. That was the big mistake of the Titanic.
They say that there were only half enough lifeboats. Was that true?
What?
They said that there were only half enough lifeboats for the people.
There were not lifeboats enough for, I would say, two-thirds of the people. Maybe only half. But this is about all ships. This is about all ships. No ship at that time on the ocean had room enough in the boats for all people aboard. And even if they had, there would still be more people for certain boats and not for other boats, because of the way the people move. So this is a point you have to count with, and either win or lose.
There were reports that the most of the people who perished were crew and third class passengers.
Yeah.
And also the first to drown, they say, were dogs that they had on board, which were kept down by the galley.
The officers needed knuckle boosters to keep people back from the boats, to have an orderly loaded of the boats. And I won't blame just foreigners, you know, there were Englishmen too, they were the same. But if something like this comes, everybody wants to be saved, regardless of the other fellow.
While we're here, what would the dogs be doing on board? Why would they have dogs on board? They said there were dogs down by the galley, and they all got drowned. But I was wondering why they would have dogs on board.
What happened again, Bob?
They had dogs. Dogs. Would those dogs be the pets of some of the richer people on the boat?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Well, there were not enough boats, that's one thing. And the room where people could enter the boats was too small for all those people that were rushing to the boats. This is, I think, the main cause for the loss of so many people. And the time that they had to go on board was short too.
There were...
All I remember from the last look of it, I saw a lot of things floating in the water, which much like they were human beings. Because, and I heard from far away someone crying, it was a woman. She was crying for help, she was hanging onto some people of debris, and her cries went dimmer and dimmer till it ended. This was about the biggest what I remember of it, when people finally stops crying and goes down.
Mm-hmm.
But for the cows in Amazon, the captain was all right.
The officers
had not really working together, you see.
Yes.
Every on board his own hand, what they thought was right. And so there was no complete effort, you know, to get it. The condition was, they could be happy with those number what they saved.
Yes.
They could be happy.
Yes. There have been stories of that there was some cowardice, and there are stories of heroism. Could you tell us something about those?
What was the pull?
They say that there were stories of cowardice, that some were cowardly people.
Oh, yes.
And some were heroic.
Yeah. Those, if you are in a multitude like this, you can catch up everything what happens, you know. And you have to look for your own self. So the little sightings, someone has said, someone has said, and so on, and everything is okay and true. But you just can't say, you think just what we got to do, where will we end up? But as I say, my boss, he was a traffic inspector from the insurance captain, just sent the officer and took him and me and put us in the boats. Because the captain wanted a witness in good standing with the company to clear up everything, that everything was, what he could do, he had done. And I think Captain Schmidt had done as good as he could, but I can say the same for the officers. They were not coordinated.
You mentioned earlier that there were some very important people on that boat. Like maybe some, like I think you mentioned. People like the Guggenheims and so on.
Guggenheim and Gracie. Gracie was a high-ranking officer. Guggenheim was a rich banker. And there were a lot of people like this. And a lot of women, you know, you would hate to see going to date.
And the rich as well as the third-class passengers perished.
Yeah.
The rich as well as the poor perished.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the matter of the officers. Who pays the highest price gets the most protection. So, they had to say in the first place to get the first class passengers down. And I don't blame them for it. I don't blame them, you know. This is, you got to work for the best of the company, and even if it's a tragedy, you got to do what you think to do, and that is get the what would it help to save maybe 20 Italian passengers compared with the 20 people from New York and Chicago? Huh? If I am on board and this happened, you know, I would say, of course, those people saved them. And when you see the woman, you see Italian and the French woman compared with the English or American ladies, of course, you could be more first the better looking ones, yeah?
As the boat was going down, sinking, that the people were singing hymns on board.
Yeah, near my God, it is a point, you can't be everywhere, you can't see everything. But it is said that the band played near My God to Thee. And there was Alexander Ragtime band, what they played. And People don't care what the band plays, but the band suits a little bit, you know that is all. If you see there's a band that is playing, then you have a feeling there is something still there. But if everything is quiet and you just hear the cries for help, then you panic.
After the boat sank,
yeah,
there are, of course you were off at then, but
yeah,
after it sank and the people were in the lifeboat, some of them,
yeah,
they said they had prayer services where they thanked God that they were saved.
Yeah. Well, we tried in the first place to get away with the boat, because when the ship went down, you know, that suction of the water endangers your boats. So we went away as good as we could. And we had not many experienced oarsmen there, you know, to bring the boats away. But we went as far as away as we could, and we were told that help was on the way. Help was on the way, and that was Kunas Carpathia. She came up after maybe, you don't know the time, you know, everything goes over. She came, we saw the lights coming, and as we saw the lights, we were kind of happy, and some help was coming. And they came and did a real good job. I must say, the Cunard Lions men, they were better trained than the White Star Lion men. They really knew the job, how to do it. But then it is on the matter of the ship's master too, you know. Captain Rostron of the Carpathia, he was a good captain. And we had Captain Schmidt. Well, I have not too much ridicule for him, and I'm not surprised either.
They said that the radio operator on the Carpathia had gone to bed for the night and didn't get the message as soon as he would have if he'd been on duty.
No, that is right. The first one who got the message was the radio operator on the Frankfurt, the German ship. And that German ship was, we say, what I tell you now, that is the tragedy of the case. The British ships are manned by men of the Marconi Company, and the German ships are manned by men of the Telefunken German Company. And each party hates the other. No competition. Because if Marconi was alone and the Germans were not, Marconi would have the monopoly of the whole business. And the hated that the German company had all the German ships, and that was quite a part of the open. So, for instance, the Frankfurt came, and as soon as the master of the Frankfurt heard there was a tragedy, he gave order, break out the blankets and bake bread. Under circumstances, the best thing to do, you know. And he did that and they came. And then they asked by radio, where is your proper position? And he got returned, you are a fool. You are a fool. That means, for the fellow who asked what's the problem, no, that was, you are a fool, is a standard answer from the operator to stay out. They don't want the Telefunken to have any business or any claim or prestige for having saved. They wanted that Alfa Marconi, you know? This was just a big problem what we have with the Titanic, that this had happened. So they were told, you're a fool. And as the people then went in the boats from the Titanic, they saw there goes a big ship going by and paying no attention, because they were told you are a fool. You see what the clumsy play from one fellow on a ship has a big meaning for the whole thing. There could be a hell of a lot of people saved if they Frankfurt had come by, but being told you are a fool, well, they steamed over and didn't care anymore, because it was night, you couldn't see what was going on.
That's terrible. That is terrible, isn't it?
It is, but I came to a war, you know, the First World War, and I have seen more of it. So, things you forget slowly. But most people, what I think is, when she went down, all the people were on deck. They've been floating down underwater and crying. That was the worst of it. When you couldn't see it, you know, this is darkness. That was the problem.
What were your last thoughts as you pulled away, knowing that all of those people had gone down?
What my thoughts were? They're kind of doomed, you know. The tragedy was too much. You need a time to... My thoughts were in first line with Mr. Ismay, who was the general manager of the White Star Line. And I knew him well, and I knew he had a hard fight against the Cunard Line. You know, there was the Lusitania and the Mauritania, those two fast ships. They took all the passengers away from him. And now he came up with the Olympic and the Titanic and thought he could regain some of it, and we had that disaster of the Titanic. That was my former start about the general manager of the company. I knew that man personally, because when he wanted to know something, he always asked his men, that German chef, that was me, that German chef, what he had to say about this or this, because I knew very well what the German companies did. And He had a lot of it. For instance, at that time, you know, from making a weekly service between Europe and New York, you had to have four ships. One ship going out on week, on staying in New York on week, coming back on week, staying in the Hampton on week. That was the usual term for everything. Now comes the mind that very well. Mr. Ismay of the White Star Line, he had the idea to cut those 4 weeks down to 3 weeks, so that he needed only 3 ships instead of 4. You understand it? You know, if you understand the point, you know what happened to the Titanic. This is my explanation, because I know it. He wanted to cut it down to 3 weeks, and I am darn sure that the Titanic run in his mind on a 3-week schedule. And the Cunard Line with the Lusitania and Mauritania, she traveled on the 3 weeks. That was 6.5 days out, 6.5 days in, 3 days in New York, 5 days in Southampton. That's 21 days. Und Mr. Smith from the West Starline, he tried to adapt it 3 weeks for his service on the field, because they had not the experience. They had not the knowledge about the ice conditions and so on. And then April is the worst month of icebergs. It is in the end of March, April, when the sun shines on the ice up there, that the big glaciers went down and coming now floating down south. That is what happens to the Titanic. If the first 4 years was in August or September, that wouldn't have happened. But it happens in April with the ice.
During your lifetime, have you dreamt about the Titanic sinking sometimes?
Today. I'm always thinking of her. And I love that ship. That's funny, yeah? I love that ship. It was a well-built, real good ship, and I know people are bought on the somewhere or other, you know, there's a hell of a lot of ships which I like, because I saw them and I handled them. You know, when you have that insurance business and so on, you have to know everything about it. And the more you know, the more you like them. No, really, Titanic is a darling to me, no matter what other people say. And if she had lived, as the Olympic did, you know, those two ships running together, you know, they would have a real good money makers for the film. But after the Titanic, the White Star Line's life was sealed, you know. It was just a matter of time before Cunard took over. It happened quite a few years later, but it had to happen sooner or later. The White Star Line couldn't exist anymore profitable. And it was a good company.
And you say you still sometimes dream about the tragedy of the Titanic.
Dreaming? I'm not a dreamer. No. Because you don't put the sitting there and thinking. I do a lot, and that keeps things alive in me.
So the Titanic has been with you for a lifetime.
Yeah. It's really from the first day it happened till today. There was not a single day where you don't think of it and turn things over in your mind. And you see the people too, the captain as well as officers, and you, from day to day, you make your mind up more and more what was good and what was wrong. And the thing what I would say is there's no cooperation. Things could be better. As I say, someone said if that was a German ship and the German crew, it wouldn't have happened. It's not against the English seamen and so on, but the organization wasn't high on the top. The organization was not on the top. But otherwise, you know, Mr. Ismay, who was a general manager. He was a nice gentleman and capable of doing things. He had built up the White Star Line, he inherited it from his father, and he had built it up, and it should have a good foot here, but the Titanic is wiped it all out.
Well, it's a wonderful story,
yeah.
And it's wonderful to hear it from you,
yeah.
Firsthand.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, but we can't forget that it's a tragic story. And as you have said, tragedy and the thoughts of it have been with you every day of your life.
Yeah.
Most of us don't have to go through life carrying with us a tragedy of that nature.
Yeah.
So I would ask you if I might have your permission,
yeah,
to have some of what you have said, or all of it, or some of it, portions of it, broadcast on the radio.
Yeah.
If that would be all right.
You got it. What I told you is as good as a note, and you can do with it whatever you want.
Well, thank you.
I don't think anybody can make a court against us for doing it, no?
No.
Because they were not there.
I'm just very thankful that I found out about you.
Yeah.
And that you were so good as to give me this interview.
Yeah.
I very much appreciate it.
That's all right. You know, it is my boss, Mr. Hedemer, he was traffic inspector. And we had to travel the ocean back and forth, and we watch all the companies, how they work. You know, otherwise every captain would do something just for his own prestige and throw everything overboard. So that is what he was traveling for, and I traveled with him. If he picked me, well, he knew why he picked me. And I saw things what they happened and I tell it.
Now, you told us a great deal, and I just wonder before we close,
yeah,
if there's anything else that you remember that you think you might like to tell us.
Yeah. Well, looking at the whole thing from here, I see it could happen to any ship. But there's one question. Should the Titanic go with 22 miles an hour over the ocean in a dark night when they know it is April, that there's a big danger of ice? You remember? But it was her first voyage, and she wanted to make a good time, to make a big impression in the American newspapers. You see? If they said she came in slower than the Olympic in August, her reputation was lost. She was a poor second, so she had to show something at the wrong time of the year. I saw Mr. Ismay a year later, and at this time the Germans were building three bigger ships than the Titanic, Imperator, Vaterland, Bismarck, those three. You know, the Imperator went as Cunard Line, Berengaria, and Bismarck became a White Star Liner, so the Germans built those three ships. And then Mr. Ismay, he asked me, do they intend to run a weekly service with three ships? Which so far only took four ships, you know. I said yes. Und das vom Hamburg, das ist ein full day more than from Southampton, you know. I said, we have that all figured out and we will do it. That was the biggest price for him, you see. What he couldn't do from Southampton, the Germans would do from Hamburg. So, even a man like Ismail, who had this matter on his mind, you know, he was surprised that other people could do better than he did. But I think they hadn't done their homework good enough when the Titanic came out. After all, you see, I still like the Titanic and of all the ships on the oceans, and I know all of them, and at that time the Titanic was my darling. I know I liked the Titanic and Olympic, they were two ships I really liked.